I call the Health and Social Services Committee at order at 1:31 p.m. on Wednesday, February 8th. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please silence your phone as a courtesy. Members present at the committee are Senator Van Imhoff, Senator Giesel, Senator Begich, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Wilson. Today we'll have an overview of Senate Bill 20. We'll list of U-47700 as a controlled substance, which is sponsored by Senator Meyer. My intent is to hear the bill and take testimony and set aside the bill for further consideration. We would now like to welcome Senator Meyer and his staff to the table. And please, Senator, introduce yourself for the record, and you might need to pull up another chair here. And when you're ready, please begin at your will.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, members of this HES committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer, Senator Meyer, and I represent Senate District M. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 20. This bill simply would classify a synthetic opioid called U-47700 as a Schedule 1A controlled substance. This is a very serious drug, and sometimes referred to on the street as pink or U4. It's 8 times more powerful than heroin. This drug started, researching this drug back in the 70s, and it was patented but never approved for human testing or consumption. And now there's a demand for drugs, especially opioids, and so the labs in China are busy making this drug and have been producing it and selling it in great quantities online. The drug is very deadly. The National Enforcement Agency reports 45 fatalities thus far linked to the drug since 2015. And here in Alaska, there has been 3 confirmed deaths. The federal government has issued a temporary placement on the drug into Schedule 1 due to the imminent hazard to public safety. We are all painfully aware of the opioid crisis that's happening not only nationwide, but here in our state. You know, I don't think a day goes by where we don't hear somebody's house getting broken to, somebody's car, somebody getting held up, so that people can get money to support their habit, their opioid habit. I would urge you to pass this bill and classify this drug as a Schedule 1A substance so that law enforcement can go after those who are selling and, of course, using, purchasing, possessing, and manufacturing and transporting this synthetic opioid here in the state of Alaska. I guess, you know, my preference, of course, is to go after those who purchase in large quantities for the purposes of selling, but this would also allow those who possess and use it to also be charged. I want to thank you for your time, and my staff here is Christine Marsegan, and she's been working this bill very hard and knows it much better than I. And we also have the state's chief medical examiner, Dr. Butler, and also Kay Burkhart with the Alaska Mental Health Board Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse here to answer questions as well. So, Mr. Chair Wilson, with that, I'll conclude my comments, and we'll be happy to take any questions the committee may have.
Any questions from committee members? Senator Van Hemel?
We talked about this quickly. Thank you very much for bringing this up. And one of the questions that I have is, after reading a lot of the supporting articles, is that it seems that the chemical can change slightly, and then it becomes no longer 47700, but I assume it becomes 47701 or something like that. So how much flexibility do we have in the chemical composition that still makes it 00, so it falls under this statute?
Mr. Chair and Senator Von Imhoff, you know, that's an ongoing frustration. I've brought many of these bills forward, whether it be the spice bill with synthetic marijuana, or basalt synthetic cocaine. And it does seem like once you tighten it up, then they just simply change some chemicals. So it does seem like we're constantly chasing our tail on this, but I think it's a tail we have to keep chasing, because obviously it does take them a while before they change the chemical compound. And but how much the chemicals have to be changed, and how much flexibility maybe we have in regulations to make that adjustment, I'd like to leave up to the Dr. Butler or somebody who knows much more about that. Maybe Christine, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Senator Vaughn, I'm off through the chair for the record. My name is Christine Marisigan, and I would recommend that Mr. Charles Foster over with the crime lab answer that question.
Okay. I have one follow-up question, though. Okay, and so the second thing I noticed is that this was as a result of a doctor, I think, in 1976, that did this chemical work and then posted it either on, well, at that point, probably in the patent office. So the other question is there, do you know of any other efforts where patented chemicals can be, portions of it can be redacted so that these efforts to copy these kind of synthetic drugs and market them are curtailed? Since the internet, of course, is more readily accessible, we have to assume that this will just continue. Is there efforts on the national level with the patent office to perhaps tweak how we publish chemical compositions as not to be copied? I don't know if that's possible. I don't know what the patent laws are. I'm just curious if there's been efforts.
For the record, my name is Christine Marisigan, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer. In response to Senator Von Imhoff's question through the chair, I actually made that same inquiry to legal, asking, well, if anybody can go and look up a patent on a particular chemical or product, couldn't they just replicate it? And wouldn't there be any effort to kind of keep that stuff away from public consumption so that other people couldn't do the same thing? Patents are public information, and they aren't exact. And so what actually is something that you think would be a great idea to redact the information actually harms people when the labs then go and make this stuff up, because what happens is that those are not exactly to specification. And so you're kind of playing Russian roulette when you're getting some of this stuff from the drug labs from China. And the other part of that is, too, with those things being manufactured not being quite up to whatever manufacturing processes that they had originally, not only are you taking a risk with what's being put out there, but a lot of times they're disguising it or selling it as something else.
Mr. Foster, were you available to answer Senator Van Imhoff's first question?
For the record, this is Charles Foster, forensic scientist at the State Crime Lab. Could you repeat the question?
It was thank you. This is Senator Von Imhoff. It was how much variation or variability in the chemical composition does the definition of 47700 cover, and what kind of leeway do we have that this statute will cover a certain variety of drugs, chemical composition?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, U47700 is specific to only one chemical structure, so it would be covering that chemical structure, but no other analogs of similar chemicals.
Follow-up, Senator?
No.
Senator Begich.
Dr. Butler, just very quickly, do you know, or perhaps gentleman online knows, what the level of use of pink is in the state now?
Yes, Dr. Butler, if you can approach.
U47700, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jay Butler, our Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. Through the chair, Senator Begich, all we know is that we see the tip of the iceberg because this is not a substance that shows up in most of the urine tests or drug screens that are done in clinical settings. And I'm sure Dr. Foster can give us more details of the specifics of the testing. But we have been specifically testing for it in decedents referred to the Division of Public Health, the State Medical Examiner's Office, for investigation. And that's how we found three cases of overdoses in Alaska. All three occurred in different parts of the state, which certainly suggests that it's fairly prevalent in the various communities. In two of the decedents, only what I'm going to call U4 on a first numeral basis, only U4 was detected in the postmortem specimens.
Follow-up, Senator Begich?
Just a very brief follow-up. Three cases is too many, and so I commend you for moving forward on this, and Senator Meyer as well. Just the follow-up question is, when Senator Von Imhoff mentioned U47700 and the fact that it could be derived from, has there ever been an attempt made in your knowledge to pass a piece of legislation like this that also added derivatives of, you know, a definition that would include derivatives of 47, a drug like this, like so U-47700 and derivatives from U4, which could help address that issue she brought up?
Senator Begich, through the chair, it's an excellent question. So there has been some legislation, and I'm familiar with what's been done in Texas to address the challenge of synthetic cannabinoids. I think the legal analysis of whether or not that's been successful is ongoing, so I cannot say whether or not that's been a successful intervention or not. The way the feds have approached this is to have emergency regulatory authority, and that's how U4 ended up on the federal controlled substances list. That still requires, my understanding is, some confirmation through congressional process, and I'll be happy to defer to someone from law if they would like to provide more detail, but that's not currently an authority that we have under state law. So that would be an option of how to make our system more agile. And as you point out, it is, and as Dr. Foster mentioned, it is a very specific chemical structure. So, Mr. Chairman, if you'll forgive me to take that chance and to sound like a total nerd, but the listing in the law will be by the chemical name, and there's currently a misspelling in that we'll want to address. The final part of the name is methylbenzamide, and it's currently methylbenamide, so there's a Z missing, which may sound like minutia, but I understand from my law enforcement colleagues that could be a major issue when it comes time to actually use this law.
Senator Machiki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, in some of the backup documents, it talks about the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs estimates that new psychoactive substances are emerging globally at an average rate of one per week. I'm just wondering if a better way to go may just be to either automatically adhere to the federal Schedule 1, which does include U4 currently, or to include verbiage about all non-prescription synthetic opioids. I'm just wondering what might be a better path, because I, as Senator Meyer said, I've really chased the spice thing around for years. It may be a better catch-all. I just was wondering what the doctor's opinion may be on one of those two choices.
Senator Machiki, through the chair, I don't know that I have the best solution. I think I pretty sure most of us can agree what we currently have is not agile enough to even begin to keep pace with the ability of the chemists. I think that's certainly, to my mind, another viable option to keep the list more up to date. I would certainly defer to my colleagues either in law or public safety that actually have to use these laws for prosecution purposes as to whether or not that's the best approach.
Follow-up, Senator?
Is the gentleman on the line still best equipped for that question about either of those two choices?
Mr. Foster, are you still with us?
Yes. The question, as I heard it, is making a template where you talk about changes on a molecule work better than seeing each one individually. Through the chair, I believe the law currently for substituted cathinones is like that, which works well as a larger net of catching a lot of the new compounds as they come out. The only difficult part with that is you have to have a pretty good knowledge of chemistry in order to interpret whether or not a compound is indeed fitting that description. So in those situations, we'd be going to court to explain to a jury organic chemistry and why that specific chemical meets what's written in statute.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it just seems like there has to be a better system than it takes us months to pass a bill. And they're emerging globally on an average rate of one per week. It doesn't take long to be years behind the eight ball. Just we don't have to answer it today, but there certainly has to be a more effective general way to deal with it than trying to name each substance.
I agree. Senator Diesel.
So my comment is more in response to Senator Machicki's question, and this is kind of a nuance of the bill. If you look at the title and also line 5 on page 1, it talks about Schedule 1A. So these scheduled drugs with the letter A after the number refers to the state of Alaska's scheduling of drugs. And Schedule 1 drugs, as you may recall from a previous discussion in this committee, are drugs that have no therapeutic use, have high risk of side effects, etc., very dangerous drugs. But in this list that the state has, Schedule 1A, is the medication fentanyl, that's on page 2, line 24, and methadone, which is on page 3, line 4. These two drugs in federal law are Schedule 2. In other words, they are prescribable by a clinician with a DEA number. So this bill refers to a slightly different list than perhaps you're thinking of in federal law. So that's just a nuance here. I agree with Senator Machicki, a more nimble way to take care of this kind of stuff, these illegal drugs, but this is probably not the method. Thank you. That was all, Mr. Sherman.
Thank you. Any other questions related to this bill?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. At this time, I'd like to open up public testimony on Senate Bill 20. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? If so, please step forward. And for the record, please state your name, and I believe we'll call Ms. Kate Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart. I am the Executive Director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, as well as the Alaska Mental Health Board, and my comments today are on behalf of those organizations only. You have a letter of support for the bill in your packet, and we appreciate the sponsor as well as the committee and members of the legislature being willing to address an emerging public health concern. Given that your conversation has moved toward the idea of how can we be more nimble in addressing emerging public health dangers such as synthetic opioids and other synthetic substances of abuse, I would be remiss if I did not mention that one of the recommendations of the Alaska Opioid Policy Task Force, which was a joint effort of the Division of Public Health and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and Senator Giesel participated. One of those recommendations is to provide for a mechanism like Dr. Butler described that the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency uses for emergency regulatory action when there is an emerging public health danger posed by some sort of synthetic substance. We don't have that ability right now in Alaska, so we rely on proactive legislators to address those concerns. But there is a consensus recommendation from the Opioid Policy Task Force that this would be a way that we could pounce on things earlier rather than waiting until January every year to get ahead of those things and to give law enforcement the tools they need to move forward. And so given that I had the opportunity to work with the task force, I felt like I would just put that into the universe. It's not a recommendation related to this bill at all. We appreciate the bill, but since your conversation led there, I thought I would add that to the mix. Thank you.
We also had on the list Dr. Butler to testify, but you gave comments. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Anyone else in the room would like to testify on Senate Bill 20? Seeing none, and seeing none on the phone, we'll thus close testimony on Senate Bill 20 and move this to, we'll ask if there's any amendments to Senate Bill 20. Senator DeGiesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment Number 1.
Well, we'll take a brief at ease to get that distributed. Back on the record. Before we take up the amendment, we have some answers from the bill sponsor to a couple of the questions from the panel, so we'll take that up from Ms. Segan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, some of the questions that were asked earlier, my staff, Christine Marsegan, has some additional information that she would like to provide at this time.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Christine Marsegan, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer. Through the chair, there was an inquiry about, well, is there any kind of wiggle room with some of the chemical composition of this material that we're deciding to do Schedule 1? And if you read in Section 1, it includes opiates, but it includes their isomers, esters, salts. So there are variants there that are covered under this particular bill. And then in follow-up, there was another question talking about a better, more nimble regulatory way to deal with this, as Senator Machiki had specifically stated. And, yes, I had also posed this question to a number of people of how can we possibly keep up with this if they're constantly churning these things out and we have to wait for legislation. And some states do an emergency regulatory board that does then emergency schedule materials that then they can basically act upon while they wait for whatever comes through the next legislative session Some people have also talked about fast-track legislation, that like at the beginning, if you already have recommendations from your substance abuse advisory boards, that you put that on, and then that just goes through, and then that way it then catches up to whatever the practice is for going after those people that might traffic in these kinds of materials. However, I would also caution, and this has been an interesting topic of conversation, in putting a material on the controlled substance list, you're basically making it a crime to handle this material, to sell this material, to produce this material. And so there is the notion that you do need to go through a process where those materials are said to be dangerous, where there's testimony and there's public input about those materials, so that you're not trying to make something maybe on the controlled substance list that maybe doesn't need to be there. So that was sort of a power of the legislature, is to be able to make something like this on a controlled substance list.
Senator Machicki.
I heed your warning, and my only comment is that we sort of tried that with the spice thing, right? And we finally said anything within these parameters is going to be regarded as a synthetic drug that's illegal in the state of Alaska. I mean, I think it's fair to say it didn't work. So I think there's probably a balance. And I will talk to you and the senator before I make an amendment suggest an amendment to see if there is something we can do to perhaps put parameters around the ability to create emergency authority. See if there's something in between that might be more effective.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may, the synthetic cannabinoids or marijuana, whatever you want to call it, the spice, that one was a little easier to deal with, because we went after the packaging of it and how it was being sold. It was being sold as incense, and obviously it had nothing to do with incense. And so that way, It was much broader. When they're trying to sell something as incense, when clearly it's a dangerous drug, and it had more to do with the labeling than it did the drug substance itself. If I recall, too, if it didn't say approved by Food and Drug, then they couldn't sell it. So that one was a little easier. And again, I don't know that our efforts have been for naught on this. For example, the bath salts is similar to this. You don't hear about that problem anymore. So it's almost like they went from bath salts, which was more like cocaine, now to a heroin, which, of course, is worse. We're open to any suggestions the committee may have on how to tackle this, but I do agree with Ms. Marsegan that we are making something a crime, and people could go to jail for a long time if they sell this, and it warrants at least a deliberative process like this, I believe. But there probably is a better way, and we're certainly open to it.
And on the phone, we also have Captain Michael Duxbury from the Alaska State Troopers Drug Enforcement Unit. Captain, do you have any comments you'd like to add upon some of the drug enforcement issues or challenges or successes?
Thank you for the questions. Through the chair, I would like to address a couple of things that I've heard. One is originally discussing the federal scheduling. One of the reasons we had for wanting to schedule this in the state system is that the federal drug enforcement folks have minimums for going after some of these things. And as we know, some of those minimums are quite high for us, and still in a small population with a wide distribution can have a major effect on us, and we needed the ability to look at the ability to perform operations that could target some of the issues that were going on with PINK or U47700. Another dynamic of that is that it is readily available on the internet and it is readily available in some certain types of retail outlets in Alaska at the moment. Its ability to have a negative impact on the state is significant, and even small amounts of it were worth us paying attention to because of its lethality. The other issue that was talked about was chemical structure. I did a great deal of research with both an expert out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and I do not pretend to speak for a chemist or anything else, but also with the chemist from the DEA. And what they have told me, where they have a broader exposure, the DEA chemist and the guy out of Las Vegas, was they have seen small changes once or twice in all the time that this has been out, and as you noted, it's been experimented with and put out for a long time. It's just become popular since the opioid problem. And that asking them about the isomers, the salts, and the esters, if that would cover it, and they have not seen significant changes like they saw in spice, and figured that our attempt would be a pretty good attempt at this spot. Doesn't mean it would cover all situations, that somebody might not come up with something, but they felt relatively confident in saying to me that they believed this would have a real good handle on it.
Are there any questions for the captain? Thank you, sir. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you, Senator. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Christine.
Question for the captain. You know, like we're seeing with the dramatic explosion in heroin and synthetic opioid and prescription opioid distribution and abuse in the state of Alaska, what if you can order online and have it come to your doorstep or the place you receive your mail, what does the department have in mind for some effective way to interrupt the flow into Alaska?
Through the chair, sir, frankly, it is a tremendous problem. We have are being exploited by folks that realize, in a saying in my business right now, is bring half as much illicit substances to Alaska, make three times as much money. The gangs from the lower 48, real live, honest to God, organized crime gangs are exploiting our communities that are vulnerable. And in that exploitation, they're taking advantage of people's weaknesses and misery and leaving our state with lots of money. We are concentrating on those places that are hubs for things to come. Because if we go to a place where it's already been distributed, I don't have enough manpower, time, energy, or money to tackle those type of problems. As it stands now, with the revenue sharing for local municipalities who used to become part of our task force and our ability to field enough folks to do this, that's a real problem. And we appreciate that folks like Dr. Butler work hand-in-hand with us. Our main goal right now is, under the current constraints that we're dealing with, is to try to find collaborative and cooperative partners in any and every avenue. We cannot rest our way out of this problem. We have to have social programs. We need more deterrence for consumption and education as much as we need enforcement.
Thank you. Senator Begich?
Captain, just a follow-up question. You know, earlier there was mention of possibly creating this process of an emergency regulatory, a more nimble process for identifying. Would that help with your enforcement end? I recognize the prevention end that you're describing and fully support it, but would that help on the enforcement end, a more nimble process?
It is my belief that having a regulatory process that is puts authority in maybe DHSS folks and Dr. Butler's folks who can do the research and help would make us more agile in our response and a lot more nimble to respond to these things that, quite frankly, are putting our citizens at danger.
Thank you. Any other Senator Meyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may just veer off here a little bit, because this is a very frustrating topic for me, and I think for everybody. I also serve on the Judiciary Committee, and a lot of our Class B misdemeanors, again, people getting their house broken into, their car broken into, here in Juneau, Anchorage, almost on a daily basis in Anchorage, and people coming out of Denny's restaurant and getting robbed by gun just to get money, and record number of deaths in Anchorage, a lot of them pertaining to drug deals gone bad or protecting their turf. So although this bill is important and I want it to get passed, and I think it will help, but Senator Machicki's right. I mean, whether it's this synthetic drug or it's heroin itself or it's prescription drugs, the demand is out there. And as long as the demand's out there, people are going to provide it. And we're going to have this ongoing problem with the public safety and judiciary and of course, us, you know, trying to fight it. So my goal ultimately is, we can build more treatment and rehab centers to get people the help that they need. But ultimately, you can only help people who want help. So the treatment and rehab is no good if they don't want to be there. So I'm frustrated on how to reduce the demand, and I think it just has to be through better education and keeping topics like this out in the forefront to the public.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. With that, are there any other questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you. We'll take back up Senator Giesel's amendment. Senator Giesel?
So, Mr. Chairman, I have offered Amendment Number 1. Members have a copy of that on your desk. This issue that is illuminated in Senate Bill 20 is extremely important. And just as a side comment, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Burkhart and Dr. Butler have both alluded to the Opioid Task Force, and I think this committee would find the recommendations of that task force very interesting. They apply certainly to the content of Senate Bill 20, but they also apply to my amendment, Mr. Chairman. This amendment would move Tramadol.
Sorry.
Yes?
Ask for an objection to the amendment.
I'm going to object for purposes of discussion. So, Mr. Chairman, this would place Tramadol as a Category 4, Schedule 4A controlled substance. So that puts it into Alaska statute as a Category or Schedule 4 controlled substance. So why would we do this? Well, first of all, the DEA did this in 2014. It's on the federal schedule as a Schedule 4. It is an analgesic, that is, it's a pain medication that has been out for quite some time. When it first came out, it was viewed that it would be a pretty benign drug, but as it was followed in the first 3 years after its approval, the drug enforcement and the manufacturer began to realize that, frankly, it was indeed a drug that was being abused. It causes significant side effects, and it's an opioid-like drug. So as the complications were recognized, other countries have actually created it as a controlled substance, the UK being one of them, and other states in the U.S. have moved it onto their Schedule 4 substance list. I'm recommending that we put it on Alaska's Schedule 4. I did consult some of my healthcare colleagues, and as far as their recommendations, these are colleagues from around the U.S., I have a couple letters saying, in our states we've already placed this on Schedule 4, and we do recognize it to have potential to cause significant side effects and be addictive. So, in closing, in terms of this, this would place it also as part of our prescription drug monitoring program so that a prescriber would look up when a patient, before prescribing this for a patient, determine whether the individual had already obtained a prescription for this, and was it appropriate to prescribe it yet again, how much of it was being used, those kinds of things, potentials for abuse. So that is the purpose of this amendment. You can see in lines 2 and 3, there would be an addition to the title of the bill because this is not a Schedule 1, it's a Schedule 4. And going down to lines 8 through 12, it's a new subsection that would list tramadol. This is wording from the tramadol bill. This would be placed then in state statute.
Are there any further objections or discussions?
Through the chair, Senator, can you just tell me a little bit about tramadol? I had not heard about it in the past. Is it abused, and why are we highlighting it? Other than its potential, have we seen problems in the rest of the U.S.?
In 2010 alone, there were more than 16,000 visits to emergency rooms resulting from the use of tramadol for non-medical use. I can't document how many side effects or visits to the emergency room from overdose from this medication or abuse of it have happened in our state. I'm not sure that data has been collected. But there are significant withdrawal side effects. So if the medication is being abused, either by someone with a prescription or someone who doesn't have a prescription, the withdrawal side effects are significant and can result in emergency room visits. Through the chair, Senator Machicki.
Thank you.
And I didn't know if any of the experts here in the room or online have any additional information about tramadol that they'd like to share in terms of abuse or use, misuse in the state. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Butler. Oh. Was this Mr. Foster? Mr. Captain Duxbury, if you'd like to state your name for the record.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, I have a number of investigators that work Western Alaska, and anecdotally I can tell you that in almost all cases where we are seizing controlled substances in the neighborhood of opioids, heroin, and also methamphetamine, we are seeing a significant amount of tramadol about being sold for approximately $2 to $2.50 a milligram, sir. And also that we've had 11 incidences of capturing it before it's gutting out to the villages, gutting into out past the hubs where we've seized about 6,000 dosage units. The conversations I've had with doctors in the communities in within Alaska have outlined exactly what was been discussed in previous testimony here, but Senator, that it has an effect, it has an overdose effect, it also has been substituted when it was difficult to get opioids, and it is being abused on a regular basis.
Thank you, Captain. Dr. Butler, any?
Yes, for the record, Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. Mr. Chairman, to continue the tag team that I have with Captain Duxbury, I'll just add from a healthcare perspective, the data in terms of the burden on the healthcare system is somewhat anecdotal, but it is sort of a double whammy in that you can get the opioid type effect where you have respiratory depression. It also has toxicity on the liver, such that people will come in with extremely low blood sugars, they're having seizures, and it can be a very stormy hospital course before recovery.
Thank you. Senator Baggett?
Just very quickly, Dr. Butler, so you would support the amendment based on that statement?
The amendment, as written, certainly aligns with the recommendations of the Controlled Substances Advisory Committee, of which I am a member. Yes.
I think that's a yes.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions on the amendment? Any further objections to the amendment?
I'll remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Without any other objection, this amendment will be maintained. So my intention is to bring this bill back to the committee with the committee substitution that includes the amendment that we adopted today, back on Friday. And with that, are there any other closing member comments?
Very briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to ask, is it the intent of other senators to present some kind of an amendment related to the regulatory, or are they thinking that as a separate piece of legislation? Because I would be supportive of that if that was going to be part of the discussion.
Senator Machika?
I'm going to do further investigation. I want what we do to be effective and the right choice, so I have some questions to ask first before I move in that direction. But I have one more comment. I just had a question for Mr. Duxbury, if you're still there.
Senator Machika, I am here, sir.
So are these drugs, what would one use to detect the trafficking of these drugs? Is this detectable by dog? I mean, do we have a gap in the hubs of Alaska? And I know we have this thing called the Constitution that sometimes gets in the way of effective drug trafficking management, but is there something that we should be looking at to really step up this battle to be somewhat more successful? Because from all of the metrics I employ and all of your hard work and efforts, I think we could put us in the losing column right now.
Sir, through the chair, it's an excellent question. Dogs are not necessarily trained to detect this type of prescription medication. There have been times when it is possible, but that is not what they train canine scent detection teams to do. In terms of the losing side, I think I'd like to make a comment. I work in the state of Alaska. I love being a public servant. I have been for 28 years. I have been involved in drug enforcement for a good portion of that. I am a newly minted commander of the drug enforcement unit. And the number of people that I have in place are a fraction of what I was used to when I was a younger man doing this work. Again, we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. I think having been a member along with Dr. Butler on the Opioid Policy Board has been a wonderful eye-opening experience, because collaboration is the only way under the present budget constraints that we're dealing with that we are going to be able to make a dent in this, sir. Would we like to see the ability to detect and utilize our resources in a better way? Yes. We have a unique situation in Alaska, and that is we have some finite conduits of transporting this stuff, unlike the lower 48. We don't have as many transportation companies and systems as the lower 48, and trying to work together with the DOT and the commercial airlines industry, because they are unwittingly most times a group of folks that helps transport this stuff all over our state and into our communities, and getting folks to be able to feel comfortable building our legitimacy as enforcement and education and DHSS to get people to talk to us about the damage that's being done in their communities is some of the best ways that we are going to be able to do that, especially given the lack of personnel that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for that answer.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the discussion around this bill and the experts that have been here in the room really highlight how important this subject is to all of us on this committee. And again, I would just reiterate having Ms. Burkhart and Dr. Butler back to go through really what the Opioid Task Force did this summer. Senator Meyer brought up the idea of prevention, and that was an aspect of the discussions of that task force as well. So I just think it would be very, very helpful. We are number one in substance abuse, alcohol, substances, behavioral health issues, and it's a critical issue. I think this committee would have a lot of great ideas for legislation after hearing the report of that policy group.
Right. I agree with that, Senator Geisel. And on Monday, the 13th, Joshua Sunkist will be here to sort of give an overview of the science of addiction and start that discussion for the committee as we start looking at ways that we can start addressing some of the opioid and other type of addiction issues that are facing our state and challenges within our state. So hopefully that will start the conversation of looking for positive solutions. And then on Friday, we will hear an overview of Senate Bill 32, Prescriptions for Biological Products by Senator Hughes, and take public testimony on that bill. And with that, we will adjourn at 2:21 p.m.